Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanako Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Suzanne Medici. Hi.
Hello.
So happy to have you here. It's a pleasure.
And thank you.
I would like to start with a big question. How did you get to see the world the way you did?
All right, so I was an artist. I was born an artist. So I'll give a little bit of background. When I was before I started speaking, actually, I started drawing. I was a baby, but just get a hold of a pen, not even a pencil, just a pen and a piece of paper anywhere, and I start drawing. And then my mom said that when I was a baby, I would sing myself to sleep. So I was always singing, and actually they, my parents told me that one time there was a midnight mass, I think for Christmas or something. And my dad had me, he was holding me, and they got there late. So he was, so I was in his arms probably. It was like a year old or a year and a half. And all of a sudden they started singing in mass, and my parents said that everybody turned around because there was this baby singing out loud at the end of the church, and everybody's like, "Who's that baby that is singing all the songs?" And that was me. My mother has major in arts and also as a musician. And my father was very crafty. He was always creating things, building things, fixing things. So basically, I was everything that I breathed and lived when I was a little child was art. We had tons of books everywhere in the house, but I only wanted to read the ones that had illustrations. Like when I was very little, when I started reading, I only was interested in the ones that had pictures in it, because it inspired me to actually visualize the whole story in my head. I also, when I was like about 7 years old or so, I got a hold of those old cash registers, paper thing, rolls, and I, my dad brought them. And I was like, okay, here you have paper. And so I started making like cartoons and like animation. I started making, drawing a story like you would do in a film for animation. So it's all split in little squares. Then every summer I had one of my cousins would come and stay with me for a few days during the summer. So throughout the whole year, I prepare all the art projects that we could do together. And then my neighbors, my friends, I had everybody. I organized all the crafts. I made a list. I just I started finding throughout the year all the things that we may use for those crafts. Collecting them, and then when my cousin came over, I had a list. I had an actual paper list of, okay, so now we are going to do this boat, that this wooden boat that moves, or we're going to. So anyway, and talking later on with one of my friends, there was a very, very wealthy person. And she was telling me that, I mean, she had everything that money could buy when she was a kid. And she was telling me how those moments, everything that we built and we created, was like her best memories of her childhood. She remembered that more than, and I was like, every time that I went to her house, I was like, all this stuff, animals and all these toys, I wanted to play. She said, you know, that was not important because she had them. And I grew up in Argentina, and we didn't have that much of all the things that you see nowadays, you know, that or the, that they have in the United States, especially when it comes to toys. They were, if we had them, they were like extremely expensive. So basically, if I wanted something that I saw on TV or something, my parents were like, go make it. I was like, oh, yeah, but I want the one that, go make it. So anyway, so that's how I started. That was my escape too. As a child, that was my, whenever I was going through a rough time, all I would do is draw or sing or compose songs. I started piano when I was 4 years old. And I already was teaching my friends how to write songs. And of course, they're very silly, but still, you know, I did that. You know, my inspiration, as I said before, were like all Disney. Disney was my biggest inspiration. It was my passion. The first thing that I did when I came to the United States is go to Disneyland because that was a whole world of art and colors and the story and the music. When he had like all those cartoons that they were moving to the music, and the music was actually representing what the characters were doing, and I was fascinated by that. It was not just a background music; the music became a character, he understood. He understood how important it is to make that music is not just a separate thing; it's a holistic thing. So that is my whole point in my book, Big Brain, Little Hands. Is how to develop children's musical skills through songs, arts, and crafts. I didn't want to point out that everything that is in the book on the subtitle, but basically that's what it is. It's just how to make music a holistic experience. And the reason for this is that the brain, the brain development occurs mostly when a child is under the age of five until the age of five. So the problem with kids with autistic problems or learning disabilities is part of that problem is that the connections doesn't cross from the left side of the brain to the right side of the brain and vice versa. So for example, when we learn math, we have neurons that start firing, start crossing from one side of the brain to the other. When we have, when we learn music, same thing. When we learn dance, same thing. When we do arts, when we use colors, same thing. Now, if you have all of these things happening at the same time, those neurons actually start really firing and make that crossing. And that is why we call music therapy. But in music therapy, and I will get to that in a moment, has all these elements that I'm talking about. It's not just music. So, and also, you know, you see, it's been said many times, the term hearing in colors. When you, some people hear colors when they hear sounds and they see colors. It's kind of recently that I heard about that. It's not like I didn't hear about that when I was growing up or when I studied, but to me it makes total sense. So let's start with my education. So I started playing the piano. My mom was a teacher, so she tried to teach me. And then I was like, okay, I'm done. You know, like I need a real teacher, because your parents is unfortunately sometimes they're not patient enough. They want perfection. They it's like, it's my child. Like they had to be perfect. You know, I can't allow this. So there is a power struggle there, and it's hard sometimes to teach. To try to teach, you know, one thing is try to learn together. Learn together is completely different, which is what I focus on this book. Learn together. But when you're trying to teach, it's a little bit of a power struggle there. So finally, I went to a teacher, and then I started the conservatory. All right, that's when my downfall started, because the conservatory, the way that they taught, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Whiplash, but it's an American movie and about a conservatory here in the United States. And it's a true story, actually. The director, he went through it. And it's basically that, you know, that is the treatment that I received. You know, you do it right. You had to be perfect. You didn't study. There was no explanation. There was no passion to teach. There was nothing. It was just like, be perfect. And actually, when I presented my book on, when I launched it on Zoom, I had a former student of mine join, and she was, I said, like, you can't let me lie, because I prepared her to enter the conservatory, and she's like, yeah. And you know, she mentioned that, you know, they kill the artistry out of you, because everything is so structured. It's more about theory and learning the perfect answer and history, and it's like, when is the fun part coming? There's no fun. Oh no, you know, fun and music should not go together, according to, you know, this way of thinking. And I really suffered. I was like, why am I doing this? My parents pushed that I kept doing it. I didn't want to. My passion has always been the theater. When I started summer times, I used to go to the mountains at a place, and I met a friend, and she was a lot older than me, and she loved to read. She loved to read poetry and especially plays. And I was like, and we just spend the summer doing plays and putting them before I left the place. We just put it, I mean, it was a country setting. So they had this wooden table. It's like really, really thick. And we use that as a stage, and we lock everybody out of the dining room. It's like, you can't enter. We're rehearsing on top of the table. We're little. So anyway, but I did all the props. I did all the props because my friend had no idea how to do any crafts. And so I was like, okay, mainly I build things and little tables and, you know, and stuff. And then I joined while I was at the conservatory, the community theater. And that changed everything for me, because I was shy and I was like, you know, structure, study, be perfect, you know. And I joined the community theater, and it was this Fantastic. The director at that point decided to he had this idea. He wrote a lot of plays, the director. And they were pretty successful. So he decided, okay, I'm going to do this script, for the play, a play. And I'm going to use different characters from Shakespeare plays. Of course, this was all in Spanish. And he's like, who's with me? Who wants to read all the Shakespeare plays, or, you know, a few of them, and bring in some characters? Of course, nobody. Shakespeare is really difficult, even in Spanish. And I was like, yay, you know, and I was the youngest one in that group, the youngest one. And then there was this older lady, I think one of the oldest ladies there, and the two of us basically got a hold of all the Shakespeare plays and started reading and reading and reading, and I will come up with, okay, this character can match this other character. So we actually, he took lines from one character. I was Juliet, for example, and he would put this Desdemona, for Desdemona, or whatever, however you pronounce it. You would put lines from another character in another play that would match whatever, you know. Anyway, so it was a, and then he's like, okay, now we need music. It would be nice to have some songs. So I composed the songs, and they had to be period. So they were period songs, and I taught the whole group of people. Nobody knew how to read music or sing, nothing. And I taught them, I composed this song for the ending. I mean, I had two a cappella songs myself that I composed, but then I composed this song for the ending. And it was like, I think it was four voices. Yeah, it was the soprano. And anyway, so in the rehearsals, it was great. Every time that we did the play, at the end of the play, everyone was flat in one melody. And it was so funny. We worked so hard to make four voices, and it was just one. But at least we got it out there. When I was up, because the conservatory, the way that it works is like, you had, I mean, at least back then, I don't know now, they had like five years of training, classes, and then you split on your career choosing. So you have to choose, it's like a basic 5 years, and then you have to choose what career you're gonna follow. So I decided to follow one line, which is as a pianist, as a piano professor. The other was musical education. And that's when I met this woman, Maria Ines Ferrero. She became later on the principal of the conservatory, but she created, together with this other lady called Silvia Furno, this book called Musi Jugando. Now, Musi Jugando in English means nothing, because in English is playing music. But in Spanish means a lot, because you actually use words like touching music, which makes no sense, right? Because again, there is no playing, there is no fun. So they're not gonna use the term playing to teach music. So she created this method called Musi Jugando, which means playing with music. And in one point became the program that almost all the public schools in the country took as a basis. That changed my world again, changed my world completely, because I was like, okay, all of this suffering that I had and wanting to give up at every step, that taught me what not to do. And everything that I was learning with this woman was like, whoa, you can do this so much more. It could be so much fun, and it could be so much, we relearn, basically, relearn with her the theory that we have learned for 5 years and how to teach it. And I'm like, whoa, you know, why nobody taught me this way? I would have understood it perfectly. It's easy, it's simple, it's fun. Of course, with time, I have developed beyond that. But at that point, I was really excited about that. And one of the teachers, she was working at the conservatory. I had three subjects with her. One of them was improv, and the other one was, I think it was like all the Baroque instruments, like Baroque flutes. I don't remember the name of that subject, but anyway, and musical education. So when I was studying with her, she had at her home, she had created a little workshop, and had five of her teachers that they were the first group of teachers actually that graduated with her and go working with her method. And she created a workshop at home, and she got a lot of students too. And one of the teachers took a leave of absence for a couple of months, and she asked me, because I was going through both careers, she asked me if I would come and teach and replace this teacher just for a couple of months. And I was like, yeah. You know, the thing is that after that happened, after the teacher came back, I mean, one of the girls, I remember, she was the very first student that I had at that workshop, and I was very nervous because everything was very different than the way that we were used to be taught. And when I was about to leave, that it was my last day, this girl she put both arms on my neck, and she was 9 years old, and I was I think I wasn't even 20 yet. And she put her arms like that, and she's like, I want you to be my teacher. I don't want you to go. And anyway, so then Marines told me, like about 2 weeks later or so, the kids are asking for you. They want you back. So she said, but I don't think it's morally correct that to have you work for me while I'm still your teacher and I have to evaluate you and all of that. So she said, when you finish the career, when you get your diploma, would you come work with me? I was like, yeah. Anyway, so that's what I was doing. I was working for her before I came here. When I was finishing my career with her, we had residencies, kind of like doctors do, or I mean, I don't know if it's the same, but basically it's they call it practices, like practice runs. So actually you have to go to the school, and I have a diploma in early childhood education. So that was a set of practices. And then we had practices also for as a piano professor, and I had practices as elementary school and middle school. And basically it was okay, nobody had phones at home, the computers, nothing, you know, we didn't have that at home. So the only way to get materials was to go to the library. Now, when? That's the question. I was studying, I was working, I had to do the rest, like it was, and then and like from one day to another, sometimes they would just give you 2-3 days. And they would say, okay, so you have to work this concept, meaning for example, the kids at the end of the class, and if it's preschool, it's half an hour. If it is elementary, it's 40 minutes. Middle school, 40 minutes. They have to show, prove that they learned that concept. So with whatever you do, with whatever you do, you have to, the kids at the end, you have to let them do their thing and show that they achieve that concept. For example, how to, for the little ones, you know, they all have to clap the beat or do the beat or reproduce the beat. And okay, done. You know, they did it. When this concept increase in difficulty, especially for middle school, there was like practically nothing, no materials to work with. And you can't spend hours and hours and hours trying to find something at the library because it's impossible. You just don't have the time. And there is really practically nothing, or there was. I mean, I should say that, I don't know now, but, and I didn't have the time. So I was like, okay, what do I do? I have to work with this concept. And the books that I had, or my friends had, they had it was nothing. Or the kids already have done that song, and I'm going to bring again the same song. And so anyway, so I composed it. I was like, okay, it's easier, faster for me. And then actually they have asked me, my colleagues and my teachers, how do you do it? How do you, I don't know, I just do it. You know, it just comes to me. It's easier to me to compose something. And then I did the illustrations. So like this is across the board in Argentina, United States, same thing. Kids absolutely love my illustrations. It doesn't matter how old they are. This is like from babies to, you know, teenagers. They just go, or adults, you know. I have had adults bought the book and they're like fascinated with the illustrations. So anyway, it's just like, but the little kids are very cute when it comes to the illustrations, because I used to have them like this, like a big, you see, like it's glossy, it's it has plastic on top, so the kids can touch it all they want, and they will grab the paper from the floor, and then the rest will complain, because I like to sit with the little ones on the floor, and the rest will complain, hey, they took the illustration anyway, and they would just start walking, put it right here, like 2 inches from the faces, and start telling themselves the story that I just told them, and they would just walk away with the illustration. I mean, and this happened always. So that is why it has plastic, so because everybody needed to touch it. The little ones, they needed to actually touch it for some reason. When I was when I finished my career, I had I worked at the conservatory for a little while before I came here, and the conservatory is, I always say, free. And when I say free, it's because it's free money-wise. That's all the freedom that you're gonna get in that conservatory. Basically your soul is crushed most of the time, but it's free. So adults, they opened back then a new building. In that building, they have classes for adults and beginners. And people were camping outside to sign in, because, as I said, it's free. So people wanted to get free education. It's great. So they come to get into the admission. and they had so many students that they didn't have enough teachers. So I started working as a teacher's assistant because they needed, the classes were like the beginners, it's called basic one. It's like, there were like 80 people in one classroom. By basic two, we were lucky if we had 15. That was it. So that's the way that they do things. It's so hard that nobody's really like an adult that wants to learn music. They want to play. They want to have fun with it. It's like, it's not, anyway, so I really, really didn't enjoy working there, but it was a job. And then I was working also preschools, elementary schools. My forte, it was always been the little ones, the 3 to 5 year olds. It's always been my strength because I enjoy them very, very much. So yeah, I was working in a couple of public schools. Also, I did work in a private school that they did bilingual. They didn't have anybody bilingual. I didn't speak English back then. I just spoke very little. I could do the songs, but I couldn't really speak it. So that was that. And then I wrote down just to get a guideline of what I want to say. And I worked at the University of Buenos Aires, also with as an assistant of this teacher that was also from this method, from the Music Jugando method, and she was teaching music therapy to music therapy students at the university. And also, she needed an assistant. So basically, what I do and what is in my book is what all of the same things that we did to teach music therapy to music therapy students. As I said, theater has always been my thing. So my goal was always, since I can remember, to come to the United States and study at Strasbourg. I want to be a method actor. So I went to Strasbourg. Finally, I made it. And then it came the whole ordeal about how to stay in the country. And I needed to be sponsored. So that was my only option back then. So I just, I started looking for a sponsorship. So right at that time, I ran out of money. There was a whole crisis in Argentina, economical crisis. They froze our bank accounts. It's just a nightmare. So I had no money and I couldn't work because I was a student. So thankfully, Strasbourg gave me a scholarship for a little while until I could find a sponsor. But at the same time, the son of Strasbourg wanted to amplify the program because he also, and Strasbourg also had an emphasis on the actor should have a little bit of everything in there. Like they already had Tai Chi, but they wanted to include more martial arts, stage combat, circus, and music was one of those things. So I said, well, I can maybe create a program to teach this students music in a group setting, basic piano, guitar, and music theory a little bit, singing. And he's like, okay, just bring me a whole, I need a program that includes the whole year. You need to do a demonstration, couple of demonstrations. to see how that would work. I don't see how that could work in a group setting. So I did. It was great. Everybody loved it. Then they told me they didn't have the budget for it. Maybe in the future. So that didn't work. And kept looking for a sponsor. Finally, I found Sangeet School of World Music and Dance, and they did sponsor me. That's when I met I was a little nervous about teaching music in English, especially with the little ones, because my speech wasn't that clear. I was like, okay, how do I work with 3-year-olds? And I'm not going to understand what they're saying to me. They're not going to understand what I'm saying to them. I was freaked out. And then it's like, how do I translate all of this? I studied for so many years. I don't want to study again how to say every single word, music term in English. I don't want it. But finally, I had no choice, so I had to do it. So I was very nervous the first time that I had to work, especially with the little ones. And I met I had my first group, and the 3-year-old kid that I had no idea that the family, the whole family, his dad, his granddad, they were just this huge famous people in the industry, like in the music industry, huge. And they were coming really far to this humble place. It was a humble, really setting, had no idea. I think they even mentioned it, and I had no idea. Now this kid is, then after this group classes, he loved it. He came with a friend. And then after that, I started going to their place to teach him piano lessons privately. And he loved it. He loved it. And right now, I think he's 21 right now. He's a ballet dancer. He's actually in a great company. When I was writing the book, I thought of them, and I was like, I'm gonna contact them. It's been years, and they were so generous to sure, you know. So I brought him. His name is Jay Graska. And you can check his website, just jgraska.com is on my forward. And he has, you know, it's like he worked for Michael Jackson, Donna Summer, Jackson 5, you name it. He works for Warner Brothers. He's an amazing composer. You can check his website and you see pages and pages and pages and pages of Grammys, Emmys, nomination wins. I mean, it's incredible, his background. And so is his, you know, his family, which is like the biggest composers in the industry. So he was so generous, really, to dedicate his time. I brought him a hard copy of my draft. It wasn't even completely ready, but it was kind of, he said, me and my wife, his wife is also in the industry. She's like, we would like to see it. So I brought it, and he's like, I'm going to be busy for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be traveling, but can I get to you, you know, after that? Sure, take your time, you know. This is an absolute, you know, it's a glorious favor, really. So I was like, okay, take all the time you need. The next day, the next day, he's like, whoa, this, you know, you did such a great job. This is so great. And he wrote this amazing foreword. I didn't expect that to, for him to do it that fast. But he really loved it. It was truthful, you know? So when, after I was working for a whole year at Sangeet, we got, the school got this grant from First Five LA. Now, First Five LA, I believe now is called First Five California. It just came out like around that time, in 2005, I think. And it's a government organization. And what they do is they give grants to different art institutions. So for a calendar year, so they can teach, but the thing was to teach parents and children together. Because exactly first five, because it's like the first year, the first 5 years of a child's life to create those neural connections. And they all the time they're doing commercials, they're putting commercials on TV and everywhere, you know, your child's brain development is so important. The first 5 years of their life, talk to them, sing to them, read to them, do activities with them, create with them. It's just constant. Talk to your baby. They're always listening, you know. So this campaign, I started back then, maybe before that, but I was a sponsor because I'm bilingual. I got, and I live in Los Angeles. There's a lot of big Spanish, Hispanic community in Los Angeles. So I had one class in English and another class in Spanish. But I never, I have never taught children and adults together. I was like, how do I do this? Because I had taught adults in groups and I have taught children, many groups, in groups, but together, how does this work? You know, how do I do that? And I created I had to come up with ideas, new projects, what to do, build instruments, learn. They had to, the parents needed to learn a musical instrument, even if it's just like to play like three notes on the piano or a couple of chords in the guitar, but they needed to learn at the same time that the children needed to learn all, you know. So it was like, oh, and I started, because at the end of that year, First Five, they would just send representatives, and we had to do a demonstration on stage, and you know, and the parents had to show what they've done, what they've learned, and do it together with the kids. So I created it wasn't easy, but I created a whole program. And all these years later, I joined the Hay House Writers Workshop during COVID, and I'm like, yeah, I've been trying to write a book forever. And I'm like, let me just do it. They had a 7-day challenge or something. I was like, I can do this. You know, I can use this all the time that I can't go anywhere, and start putting all these ideas together. So when I decided to self-publish this book, I talked with Balboa Press, which are connected with Hay House. And there, you know, when I was going through the materials that I had, I was like, it's too long, and it still is too long. So basically, it became three books, not one. This is the first one. I have number two and number three halfway, because there was too much. I had to reduce, chop, and make it into a series. There was so much. So yeah, so basically that's what I created in this book is when I did the classes, I just had like some points. So, okay, so I'm gonna work with this. And I knew in my head what I was going to do with the parents and stuff. But when it came to actually put it in a book, then you had to think, okay, how am I going to write all the steps so that anybody can understand it? So the book is not for professional musicians only. And that is the big difference, because and I can show you, I don't know if you're ready to do some sharing, but I can show how the book is what is in the book, and go through there, because there is sheet music, but there's also videos that are linked to those songs. So whoever doesn't know music or can't read music, they can just go to the videos and just work with the kids through the videos. So so the idea is that parents can work with their kids at home, and there are many homeschooling here. I don't know if in Europe too, but there are many parents that are doing homeschooling, and they need certain books. I did a research before when I did my analysis of market analysis, and I was like, really, there's still nothing in the market, very, very little stuff in the market that combines everything, that you can actually, not knowing anything, you can actually do it. You can actually teach your kid some, you know, and learn yourself some music. So let me see if you can share a little bit here. I'm going to go to here. Okay, can you guys see it?
No. It's there.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. So that is the beginning, right? And then, for example, the table of contents. If you see here, there is all the concepts that you can work with, because if you're a teacher, you would want to know, divided in five modules. So they're mostly progressive, so the first module will be the easiest one, and so on, but I'll explain the differences. And the first module, for example, I would just say like what concepts. But this is mostly for a musician or a teacher that wants to work with specific concepts. So beat, division of beat, stress, the craft, the instrument building, you know, whatever we have in that module. And there are some concepts for teachers and some concepts for parents. They want to look through it. Module two is... it's a story, it's a whole story about this kid named Johnny that has made friends with everybody that lives in the garden. And then we go through each character that he meets in the garden. And it's basically very much... focused into the ecosystem and the balance there is in nature, which is very important to me. And then module three is, I named it songs about important things, because I just wanted to do some songs that are just about important things, like being thankful, like family or like the environment. What is called water and air, and it's about the environment and how important those two things are, and we need to take care of them as fast as we can. Now, module 4 is a little bit more advanced, with more advanced stuff, concepts like height, variations of heights, which is a more difficult concept for little kids to grasp. And then module 5 is about dancing. So it's like very simple, basic steps of dancing. Oh, and I forgot to mention that I took ballroom dancing and I just loved it so much. Anyway, so here is like a quick view. So that's module 1. It has this, everything has, well, not everything, but the module 1 story, the illustration, sheet music, the lyrics, and it has the activities, how to do them, guided activities, and then instrument building. And it's all done by me. Every little thing that you see in this book is done by me, like the illustrations, the activities, the sheet music, the lyrics, everything. So the same thing here, lyrics, sheet music, instrument building, same thing here. This is a little more complicated instrument. Module 2 is the story of Johnny with all the different characters in the garden. And now we go to all the garden all together activities, and then each character individual. So the butterfly, the lavender, the bees, ladybugs, dragonflies, spiders, and the ants. And then we have all the crafts. So I explain how to do all these little insects that we saw. And I will show you the real caterpillar. It's right behind me in the couch. Maybe you already saw it on screen. So this is module 3, songs about important things. Water and air, and thank you in different languages. And module 4 is about, as I said, differentiation of heights. It's a little bit, we have jazz, we have this mischievous witch that goes up and down with her broom, activities, and the song of the rain. That is on my website, actually. It's recorded. You can play it or mute it on the website. And then the last module is dance steps. So we have the waltz, we have the tango, the sheet music, and swing, country western, and cha-cha-cha. And that's that. Okay, let me see how I get out of this now. It was easy to get in. Now, let me see. All right. How did we do that, Wanako? I just forgot. All right, let's see.
As you figure it out, ask some questions.
All right, sounds good. Hopefully I can see you. Okay.
So there were a few things that came up in my mind when I listened to your description of your journey and how you got to seeing the world the way you do today, and how you now have come to a method to teach music.
Yes.
Please mute because I'm hearing myself coming back.
Hold on, but I can't figure out how to come back. That's why I am struggling here. I don't know how to come back. I'm sorry.
I meant the microphone, not the screen sharing. So you spoke of synesthesia. I don't know if you know the word synesthesia. Synesthesia is the term for what you were speaking of, like seeing music as colors or feeling things, feeling music or all these different things that can happen. I had a whole lecture that I held about synesthesia at university. So I think that's a very fascinating topic, and I don't know exactly why you brought it up and what you wanted to say with that, other than that you have to connect right and left brain for things like that, right? And then I wanted to look at how you combine so many different forms of art to come together to teach to children and grown-ups. I love it.
Thank you. Can you guys see me still, or oh my goodness, what happened now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, all right, there you go. Can you see me? Because what I see is like very strange right now. But if you guys can see me, it's fine.
We see your screen sharing as well. So,
okay. I did try to get it out of the way. All right. Let's see.
This might be a good spot for anyone who wants to comment or ask a question to do so. There we go. Perfect. So does anyone want to comment or ask a question at this point? Okay, then Suzanne, would you like to comment on what I was commenting on? So let's see what you think about synesthesia and this combining of all forms of art into one masterpiece. In this case, you put it into a book, which is really remarkable. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
All right, thank you. I was really like more concentrated in trying to figure out the technical thing. So synesthesia, can you tell me again what is the question about, or what is the word mean to you? Thank you.
So synesthesia is a phenomenon that in anthropology we talked about it in connection with rites of passage. But you spoke about it in terms of like seeing music as colors. So in synesthesia is a more general term, which means when you experience something from the senses with a different sensory connection. So like you see music, you feel music or whatever connection you make, it can come in any way. And in the studies that I held a whole lecture about it, and it was, I connected it with the rites of passage. So these are states of mind in which these things come about, happen in rites of passage as well, because these are so transformational experiences. And you were speaking of it in terms of music, and I think your connection was that to explain how the right and left brain connect and how that can come to new experiences, right, in art and creativity.
Well, this is scientifically proven that there is brain connection happening whenever we learn something new, but it's accelerated with music. With sound, it's accelerated.
and with movement, with dancing, is accelerated. I know those two studies that have been done. I haven't specifically read studies about all the other things, but I'm sure that it works together. I haven't, I don't particularly see colors when I hear sounds, but as I said, I recently, a few years back, I just heard about that, and but I have perfect pitch, so I was born with that. That is like something that you don't actually, you can't really develop. You, either you have it or you're not. You don't. I mean, what you can is develop it in a sense that if you don't know. For example, the way that I teach music and I teach piano or guitar or whatever is just singing the notes, the names of the notes. And that's why we use this, what is called the solfege, which is the do, re, mi, because actually not many people know this. The creators of the musical system were the Chinese. And they created the musical system with ABC. And then as in ballet, we have all the terms in French. It's a common knowledge that all the terms and that's the language they adopted for ballet. For music, they adopted Italian. And there was this Italian monk, Gregorian monk, and he was teaching Gregorian singing, and they had to be like sight reading the choir, and he saw that they couldn't really tune, they couldn't sight reading, they couldn't find the notes. So he grabbed he's like, how can I fix this, right? I don't remember his name, but like, how can I fix this thing? So he grabbed a poem. Well, it's not a poem. I can't come up with a name now, but it was a Gregorian hymn. And he took the first syllable of every, so it was Dominus, blah, 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 Requiem, blah, blah, blah. And so on. So he took do, re, mi, fa. So the first syllable of that poem and created the musical system. The way that we're now with do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, or T in English. So and that the whole idea for that is because when you have A, B, C, yeah, it's all great. There when all the sounds are in line. But when they start jumping, it's like the ear is, because we are so used, we are trained to see the alphabet in order. So when you want to try to sing sounds with the letters, it's so confusing. So when you train the ear to sing the name of the note over and over and over, that neuron is connecting the name with that sound. So it's connecting that particular thing. So with my students, I never have a problem with, you know, for example, they're playing and they get lost in a recital or whatever. And I just tell them it's sol. And they boom, fix it, keep going. It's re, it's D flat. Or immediately they know where to go because they're here, the hand also is connected to all of that. So basically the brain tells you where to move. You know, that's why I make my kids, my students play with their eyes closed to practice, you know, and they can play because now the hand has its own memory, cellular memory, but it's connected to the brain. So the brain, I mean, I have had adult students taking the first, they're like really excited. Like their first lesson, they never done music before, or they have. But anyway, after like 40 minutes, you know, I normally for an adult, I do an hour. After 40 minutes, they go like, oh my God, my brain hurts. I can feel my brain like crumble, like, you know, so they, it's an actual feeling. And when I started doing Zoom, mostly, that's when I realized the facial expressions of my students, the you know, when they're talking to you is one thing, they turn around, they smile, la, la, la. When they start playing, the focus, it's just like, it's a complete transformation in the face, because that brain is working full on. And I had on my presentation, I have this kid, it's so sweet. He's 10 years old, and since he saw the book, he's like, why do you put big brain little hands? So I explained to him, you know, why, and he's like, wow, I love the title. So when I did my in-person launch, I said, you know, would you come and explain why you love the title so much? You know, he always says that every time that he comes, like, I love the title of your book. And he's like, well, because when you're playing the piano, your hands are still little, but your brain is getting bigger and bigger. Your brain gets this big, but your hands are little. It was so cute. It was adorable. I have a four-year-old that is coming, we started doing, it is on my website too, SusanneMedici.com, the video that I did with the first song, the bubble song that is in my book. And I had two classes with these kids, four and five-year-olds. And the second class we recorded it. They already knew all the lyrics. That was, you know, that was it. They already, one class, they already come out from my place singing and really excited. And one of those kids, it's been like 3 months that they've been coming to classes. And last week, he came earlier. He was waiting outside. I could hear him talking. So I opened the door, and it was his grandmother. His grandmother introduced herself, and she's like, I'm the grandmother, I'm visiting. And he's like, the four-year-old, he's like, I'm so excited, you know? And I go like, oh, it's like my favorite time. And I go like, oh, because your grandma is here? And they both at the same time answer, no, because of music class. And then the next class, it was last week, the dad came, they were waiting, and the dad is like, he's so excited, he can't wait. He says, it's my favorite time of the week. And I have piano students that they have little siblings, that sometimes they bring them and they're waiting in the car, because you can actually drive here to the entrance of my place. And they're crying. They want, it's like, can I go too? Can I come in? You know, and then I remember one time I was doing this group class with one group of kids, and the baby, the mom said if she could take her to the bathroom because she needed changing. It was a two-year-old, like one and a half or two, you know. And I said, sure, you know. So I started working, and then all of a sudden, she came running from the bathroom and sat with a group of kids. There were 5-year-olds or 4-year-olds at that time. She sat there, and she was like, and so, bye-bye, mommy. Bye-bye, mommy. She just wanted to stay so badly. I work with autistic kids, too. And actually, this one child that the mom stuck with it. She stuck with the music lessons because she was taking that kid. He was 3 at the time when I met him, and he couldn't communicate. He could just not. There was like the only thing that he felt like he was mocking me, whatever I said, because he was actually trying to repeat. So I would go like, what is that? And he would go like, ah. He would try to get the sound, and it sounded like mocking, but it was him trying to get that same, to repeat whatever I was saying. And it seemed like he was not getting the instructions. So I would say, okay, now in this part, we're going to play the drum. And he was in that group, First Five LA. And I was like, okay, we're going to play the drum in this part, you know, whenever the song says this, and we're going to play this other instrument whenever the song says that. And he was like playing the whole time. And the mom wanted to take it away from him. And he was so angry. He would just be like, you know, mad. And I go like, no, 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 just let it be. Let it be. It's, you know, he's in a different category than the other kids. He learns in his own pace, right? So one time there was, we continued with the private lessons, group lessons. He was still a little kid. And one time there was, it was raining, I think. It was just only him in that class. And the mom used to say that when, because he didn't sing during the class, but little by little he started articulating one answer here, one answer there. Like he would just mock whatever I would say, but then all of a sudden he would say the answer. And the mom took him to a special classes for other autistic children, and the doctor was testing the kid constantly, and they were like, don't take him out of music classes, because you know the advance, the jump that he's doing with his music classes compared to like, you know, the specialist, like it has no comparison. Don't stop the music classes. And you know, like when he was 9 years old, and we're like, he's playing piano, and he's just incredibly smart. And he's like, one time, you know, he's like, I don't want to do the recital. And I go like, why not? And he's like, because I suck at it. And when he said that, I was like, I'm so proud. He never used those expressions. He was so right on point. I mean, it was lovely to hear him actually express a feeling, and with so much conviction. It was great. And when that one time that he was like maybe four, that all the other kids, nobody came, so it was like, okay. And I set up all the instruments right in front of him and to sing different songs, and he will pick up every instrument in the right place and put it down, pick it up, put it down, like he knew all of the songs, where to play each instrument. It was perfection. His brain was working. But the difference is that there is a delay in the answer. So you have to repeat and repeat the same thing, exactly the same. It's different than with anybody that it has, that doesn't have these difficulties. You have to change the way that you say something so the person would understand, the kid would understand. You have to change until you find, oh, here, I can, okay, this went through, this information went through. With children with brain disabilities, you just repeat the same thing, because you have to trust that they learn it. They already know it. It's just that they can't still. So you're always looking for feedback, but you don't care if they don't answer you correctly, because you have to trust that they know. It's just that you keep doing it. You keep doing it with adults too. I work with adults. I had a young man that was had a horrible brain injury, motorcycle accident, and you can see like part of his skull was indented and part of his brain was gone. And it was the same thing. You just can't change or you can't switch the way that you explain something. You have to say it the same way. So anything that adds to that, you know, we have the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain, and specialists can talk more about this. But basically, one thing is to have, okay, let's say like, okay, you have one neuron for music. Now you're firing music, arts, dancing, movement, singing, boom, boom, boom. So it's like a whole bunch. One of them has to go through to make that connection. So that is what I was talking about, holistic.
Yeah, thank you for that. Why don't we look at another side of the whole thing? Because it was a very powerful journey of transformation for you, because you came in with all this art around you and enjoying it and so on, and then you had this experience that one could actually get very tense about art. And then you've come back to choosing to be more playful with it again. So this must have done a lot, changed a lot within you. And come, what is your takeaway from this journey?
Well, I mean, I think that you can't really, you know, it's like everything else. If you didn't suffer something, it's very difficult to put yourself in the shoes of somebody else. That's what, you know, actors do best, put yourself on somebody else's shoes. But if you look at the background of an actor, of a good actor, usually they have a lot of suffering. They have lived a lot of life before actually they can do a great job. And that doesn't mean age, it means experience. You know, they can have like a lot of, and the same with artists, you know, art is usually an escape or an expression of something that needs to get out. And that's the only way that you can or you're allowed to. So it's very healing because that is creation. I mean, that's what distinguishes from animals, and even some monkeys are very creative. So really, creation is a child, for example. I have heard parents say, no, my child doesn't like music, or they're not, it's like, that's not possible. It's not. What is the universal communication? What is it? Music. That's a universal language. And what does a child, any baby in any part of the world, what do they do first? They grab something to draw with. So it's just art and music. It's our basic. It's basic. We just like, we don't see an animal trying to play music. I mean, that is not something that their senses are for. They need that for survival. We do. Human beings, we need that for survival. Art is fundamental for a child, especially to develop in a holistic way, in a healthy holistic way, and they need that. If you see if you just look at children, they're especially after COVID, oh my gosh, like they just couldn't take it on Zoom. They didn't want Zoom anymore. They didn't want no, they just want it in person. And you see all the babies, all the children, they have books and they grab the books and they want a book, you know, yeah, the parents buy them a tablet, fine, you know, but all the children, they want book, they want to draw, they want to use, they want to create, they want to get in the mud and do mud, like they all have that because it, that is part of being a human being. So all of these artificial things, electronics and all that stuff, that doesn't connect to your soul. Your soul is connected through the arts with the world. And it has changed me because I just, because I suffer so much through my whole education and, you know, of being conservative, like the conservatory name, I could have compassion for how hard this is to learn and to achieve certain, you know, for somebody that actually wants to play music or to, you know, and for that to get up to a level, a certain level, you need discipline and you need the theory, you need all of that structure, and you know, but never losing the pleasure of it. And I've heard it over and over with the feedback from former students. I have a former student that is now is about to, if he didn't like finish his career as a musician. I had many in Argentina that became musicians. They actually telling me that they're musicians because of me. They would not have continued if it wasn't for me. I have former students that created their own bands. I have a former student that I recently found out that he had his own band and he's composing his own songs. I always encourage them to. And little kids, like especially the five-year-olds, they have such creativity. They still haven't been, like cropped in that sense of being free to create. They don't have a sense of, oh, what are other people gonna think of my, like, oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to. No, they put whatever words on songs, and they're happy with it. I mean, it's just like, you know, who cares? It doesn't even rhyme or make sense, but they're happy. Who cares? Let them do it, you know? I tell the parents when they say, how long should they practice? And I go like 10 minutes a day. I had to practice 1 hour. It was torture. So I said 10 minutes. If you practice 10 minutes every day for a little child, it's more than enough. And I tell them, let them sit at the piano or the keyboard or whatever, and play with their elbows if they want. But they have to sit for 10 minutes and do whatever they want. Let them explore the instrument. Let them be free with it. Because the thing is that especially with a real piano, it's this humongous thing. And when I was finishing my career, that's when one of the teachers that I was a private teacher, she's like, it's like, well, you and the piano have to become one. But how do you do that when you were taught your whole life that, you know, this is the big monster here, you know? So my students don't have that problem. I get them to play all over the piano since day one. They just like here and they go here. So this doesn't become this overwhelming thing that I'm playing only here. And then one day when I grow up, I can go here or here, you know? It's like, well, we don't look at that part. We don't look at that part. It's like, why? It's an instrument. You see a guitar player, you know, just they grab the guitar, they go to the bathroom with a guitar. I mean, they're always carrying their guitar. They're holding it, you know, this. But the piano, you can't do that. So if you don't become one with the instrument, you can't really make a connection, and you have to become one with the instrument. The only way, let them play with it. That's all I can say.
So you had a question, Julie? You can go ahead. Did you want to say something, Julie? You can comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. I thought I was unmuted. I'm sorry. Thank you for sharing your story. It's been really inspirational. You're so passionate about music. I can just feel it, you know, from you. And I've been kind of, you know, it's a language. You know, I appreciate how you shared the story of working with, you know, all different kinds of people and how you helped connect them, you know, to express themselves. All these emotions that we have can be expressed. I've been trying to get more play piano again. I lost touch with my music during my busy adult years here, but so I've been finding it really helpful for my just sense of well-being. But my question for you is, I'm curious about your writing process. It looks like you created a wonderful book, a series of, you know, books to share all this. How did you go about writing and how did you get this done?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. So you can rephrase it if I don't answer it correctly. Okay. So as I said, I was at the Hay House Writers community, and they had this 7-day challenge thing. So they started, they gave us this papers that I printed out, and it said, like, you know, like writing 10 minutes every day, and or write, you know, it was like, one was like, write 100 subtopics that you would just talk about, things like that. I basically said, okay, what I did is, like, I wrote in a big piece of paper, okay, what are the songs that I can use in this book? What are the concepts that I can use? So I started, like, kind of grafting, okay, here I'm gonna do this songs for this subject. These other songs can go here. I want to include that. Okay. So basically I just did, like, billboard of a graph of,
Did you like, you know, dedicate time every day to do this big project? How were you able to add that into your busy life to get the book done?
Well, as you mentioned, I am very passionate about things, so kind of like obsessive, I would say. Okay. So yeah, I'm not a person that, you know, I tried, but I'm not, I'm an artist in all the senses, everything from, you know, dancing, which was my last thing to learn, from, you know, writing books, writing songs, writing, reading. When I get into a project, especially when I'm doing arts and crafts, I don't know what time it is. Seriously, okay. I don't. So sometimes I go to bed at 3 a.m. and I'm like, oh, okay. I shouldn't need to go to bed because tomorrow I have to get. And people always ask me, how do you find time to do this? I forget about time. It's 3 a.m. and I'm still working on it. My eyes are like about to pop, but I still keep working on it. That is, I get obsessed with something, and it needs to be right. So yes, I did work like almost every day, but I can't say, like, okay, I set up. Some people do. They set up from. They said, okay, I get up 15 minutes earlier, and I do from 8 a.m. to 8:30, while the kids are, like, you know, they're having their breakfast or they're getting ready. I don't know how people do that. I'm not the 9-to-5 type of person. I can't have a structure. I'm miserable when I have to work with a structure. So as a creative person, it's like whenever the inspiration comes, and it's like, it's for every, I think for any artist, really.
Thank you. I think you helped me, because I feel I'm working on some projects and I've been uninspired, but I think I'm trying to, I've put too much structure in it. I think I need to let myself play a little bit more. So that has been very helpful listening to you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And another thing that I would say that they told me and it worked is like, when you feel inspired, it's like, oh, maybe I would not sit down right now and do this, right? Even if you, I don't know how you work, and I get more inspired if I go on paper, but you know, if you don't feel like typing the computer, but whatever works for you. But even if you don't know what you're gonna write, or you feel inspired to do it, but there's nothing is coming, just write something, whatever, just do it. Just write whatever, and then you can throw it away. But at least you said, okay, I sat down, I did. This is the same thing that I was telling you about my students, that I tell them, have them sit for 10 minutes, even if they do this in the piano, I don't care, but they're sitting there, they're getting in touch with that instrument. The same thing I will say to you, just grab a pen, paper, start writing whatever you want. But you feel at the end of those 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it's like, well, I did something. It's just worthless, maybe, but I did it. And that sense of accomplishment, and anybody can find 10, 15 minutes every day.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Sure. All right, I think we're at the end of the hour, and I did talk for an hour and a half. So.
Yeah, surprise, huh? I told you. But you didn't know that. Okay, so I would like to thank you very much, Suzanne, for joining me here and sharing your story and all the time it took to write that book and to actually bring it into a spoken form for us today. So we have some idea of what the book is about, and we know about your journey and how you came to actually come to seeing things the way you do, and sharing about your passion for art, which I thought was a beautiful beginning to share how much art means to you. And yeah, thank you so much. And give us your links in the show. I will put them in the show notes. And yeah, thank you so much.
SuzanneMedici.com. Thank you so much, Wanako, for having me, and let me ramble on. I hope that people were able to follow what I said. All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you everyone for listening and joining us. And please review the podcast and subscribe and share it with everyone so that more people can get to hear these beautiful stories and sharings and offerings, because there's so many and there's so much we all can gain from this. So thank you so much, and till next time.